This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com. When I wanted sunshine, I got
rain. And then I saw her face. The stories of grave injustice in this country are all too familiar. The lawyer who sleeps through a trial, the false confessions, the convictions of the innocent. However, the less visible failures of justice meted out by America's defective system receive scant attention unless you've personally experienced it. Attorney and journalist Amy Bach has spent the last 8 years investigating the chronic lapses in courts across America. And through gripping stories and trenchant analyses, she offers a wholly original understanding of why justice fails on a daily basis for so many people across this country. The new book is Ordinary Injustice, How America Holds Court. Help me welcome to the program author and attorney Amy Bach. Amy, thanks for joining us. Whoop, you there?
Yep.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you for being here. Hey, Amy, let's just start with a real quick Amy Bach 101. Just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I just graduated law school from Stanford and clerked for a federal appellate judge in Miami when I got the idea for this book. I was a journalist before I went to law school, and I got an idea to write a story about voting rights in Selma, Alabama. And the story was widely picked up, and The Nation magazine said, okay, we'll give you a year to write about civil rights. And this gave me the opportunity to sit in a bunch of different courts. Now, the court that made me realize that I wanted to write a book was in Greene County, Georgia, which is a beautiful area where actually President Bush's largest fundraiser lives and where he vacationed 3 times during his presidency. And the day that the incident happened, where I realized I was going to write a book, I walked up the stairs to the Greene County Courthouse, and I saw a swarm of people around the public defender. His name was Robert Sorensen. He's a major character in the book. And he had a swarm of people around him, and they all wanted to talk to him for about 2 minutes before they went before the judge. Now, after he told them the plea offer, they were supposed to go before the judge and plead guilty with another lawyer who knew even less. And in this way, 48 people pleaded guilty basically in one day. And in court, it was incredibly obvious that the kind of counsel these people were receiving was way below normal. I mean, people were crying and saying, wait, I didn't realize I was going to jail. Cases broke down in the middle of the person said he didn't understand what was happening. And when you plead guilty in America, you're supposed to know that you're giving up your rights and that you're going to be incarcerated or you're going to have to pay fines. It looked like a mess, and it was very obvious to the defendants. I mean, when I talked to them outside in the halls, they were telling me, you know, they can't get in touch with their attorney. This is a disgrace. So when I talked to the judge and the prosecutor and the defense attorney afterwards, and I said, so how do you think it went? And they all said the same thing, fine. And the defense attorney said one thing I'll never forget, Robert Cernsey. He said, we have successfully done a 10-page calendar in one day. He said, nobody could say they didn't have their day in court. He said it as if speed equals success. He said it proudly. So what astonished me and what made me want to write a book is that such smart, committed, hardworking professionals could routinely act in ways that fell short of what it is people in their positions are supposed to be doing and not even realize that anything is missing.
We're talking with Amy Bach. The new book is Ordinary Injustice, How America Holds Court. So, Amy, you've spent years literally going around to all different types of communities around the country and sitting in these courts watching what's really happening.
Exactly.
And what you saw in Georgia, that's not unique, unfortunately. I mean, that's the sad thing. The sad message of your book is this kind of thing is going on all over the place every day.
Well, here's the thing. It's not unique. You can find it everywhere. And I only portray 4 communities in the book. But what I found was that problems are often misdiagnosed. Like, at first I thought, well, I'm just going to write about, defendants who don't get a fair shake. And so I went to this county in Mississippi, and I was thinking about writing that because the county had brought a lawsuit that was featured in the New York Times saying that that inadequate defense was being provided because there was no state funding. But when I got there, my phone was ringing off the hook. I could barely find anybody in court. And what I discovered was it's not just defendants, it's victims also who aren't getting a fair shake. This county had a real under-prosecution problem. And by that I mean that the prosecutor was bringing very few cases to trial. And I knew this because I talked to the court clerk and I said, my phone's ringing off the hook, I can't figure out what's going on, can you explain this to me? And she had a list of cases where people had been arrested, charged with crimes, and a lower court judge had bound the cases over so that the prosecutor by law had to present them to grand jury. But the prosecutor decided not to. Now, by law, he had to, but he also had discretion to decide which ones to bring. And it turned out, I used Ms. Wiggs's list. Her name was Ms. Wiggs, this court clerk. I took this list off of her wall, and I copied it. And I used it as a roadmap to find out what was going wrong in this county. And what I found was that entire categories of cases had disappeared. For example, there hadn't been a domestic violence case prosecuted in 21 years.
Now,
I knew this because I met a woman who had been beaten up under a bridge by her boyfriend with a tire iron so badly that she couldn't work for 2 days. There were also witnesses. Her child and her niece were locked in a car watching. And there was evidence, there were hospital reports, but yet it was never brought to grand jury. When I tried to figure it out, what I saw was that the prosecutor merely stopped bringing domestic violence cases, but no one realized this was a pattern, although individuals thought that it was their fault or that the prosecutor, you know, hadn't thought them worthy. But in fact, he had merely just said, you know what, these cases aren't worth my time. Now, there were other categories of cases that disappeared as well, but the point is that we have no idea what's going to court and what's not going to court.
We're talking with Amy Bock. The new book is Ordinary Injustice, How America Holds Court. It really is amazing. And I guess, you know, sitting here in beautiful Charlottesville, where we think and we hope that this kind of thing doesn't happen here, but you know, it could happen anywhere, really, in any community. Do you see more of this kind of thing in poorer communities or more rural communities, or is that a stereotype?
Well, here's the thing. We have no idea which courts are better and which courts are worse. I mean, how would you know? We know for every other public institution. For example, if you live in a community as I do, and I don't even have school-age children, my child is still a baby, but I know where the good schools are. I know which schools have the better test scores, which the teacher-student ratios, college acceptance rates. I also know, for example, other things about the purity of my water supply. There are pamphlets at the library when I leave the library that I can pick up. And you have a general sense that the water supply here is good. But yet, a public institution like the courts, which affects so many people, we have no idea what kind of quality of justice people are perceiving. So I got to tell you, I was giving a talk in San Francisco last week, and this judge stood up, and he basically said, why didn't you profile all the great prosecutors out there? There's so many people who do a great job. And I said, well, here's the thing. We don't know who's doing a great job and who's not doing a great job because we're not monitoring the communication, for example, between the prosecutor and police. You know, that was one of the things that made in Quitman County the cases fall apart, which is that, and that is endemic across counties across America. Also, one of the things that's really affected Americans' view of the justice system are all the wrongful conviction cases, but those are a very, very small portion because most of the cases, there is no DNA evidence, or if there is a wrongful conviction, there aren't people around who will do or can do the legwork.
We're talking with attorney and author Amy Bock. Her new book is Ordinary Injustice, and we'll be giving away a free copy here at the end of the interview, so stay tuned. Amy, what do you've spent years now looking at case after case after case where it just doesn't work, where the system that we are raised as children, we're raised to have profound faith in this system. And we all know as we get older that we start to see the chinks in the armor and we realize, it doesn't really work for everybody. And no, it doesn't really always work for the poor. But it's the best system in the world. It's because it's our system and we stand by it. But after all that you've seen, all the people you've talked to, where is the heart of the problem? I mean, is there such a thing? I mean,
There is. And I want to say two things on this point. One is that another question people always say, but it's about resources, isn't it? Yes. system, every system needs more money, every public institution needs more money, but it's not just about resources. There's no character in my book that says it better than Tom Breen. Tom Breen is probably the best, one of the best defense attorneys in Chicago. If I or anyone I loved in the area ever had a problem, I would say he's the man. But in the 1970s, he was a prosecutor who prosecuted two 17-year-old boys for raping and murdering a little girl. And about two decades later, a friend of his said, "Hey, do you ever think that you could have wrongfully prosecuted someone when you were a prosecutor?" And he said, "You know, there is one case that gives me pause." And after, because based on his tip, which was taken to the Wrongful Conviction Center at Northwestern, these two boys, after 27 years, were freed on the basis of DNA evidence. And when I asked Tom Breen, "Why did you wait so long to say something?" he said, in essence, "It's hard to rock the boat when you're in the boat." He said, "It's hard to rock the boat when you're in the boat. The problem is that there's been a collapse of the adversarial system, and the lawyers have stopped checking each other. The lawyers and the defense attorneys and the judges and the police don't have anybody saying to them, 'Wait, let me check your investigation. Let me call you on the fact that you disregarded that defendant's rights.'" There's no monthly report that people get saying how many people plead guilty without attorneys or these kinds of things. And so the people in the system are allowed to operate unchecked, and they become blind to the fact that they're no longer doing their job.
It's sort of like doctors that always circle the wagons and cover for each other when there's mistakes.
But doctors have report cards. You know, doctors, for cardiac surgeons, they get something that says how they're doing and how many mistakes they've made, and there are committees where doctors get together and discuss what went wrong. When things are pointed out in the criminal justice system that prosecutors, for example, wrongly prosecuted someone, they staunchly stay behind. Even in the face of DNA evidence, they're allowed to do this. They rarely are given sanctions, the Duke lacrosse player prosecutor notwithstanding.
Yeah.
So...
And there's and we don't have any type of report cards or any metrics that compare courts in America. We just are told, "Hey, it's the best in the world. It's not perfect, but it works pretty darn good."
Exactly. And when there are these big show trials, is the one that will go in the example of the World Trade Center terrorist,
in
New York. That will happen soon. This will be held out as an example of American justice. Both sides will go full hog. This will be adversarialism at its best. And the real tragedy is that this is not what most Americans receive. And the world is going to think this is what our justice system is like. And in fact, most Americans suffer the criminal justice system, and no one sees, because the people in the system can't even see what's going wrong.
Yeah.
So it's like there's a chronic injustice, which is the meaning of ordinary injustice, right, is that the people in the system become blind to what they're doing, so it just becomes regular day in and day out.
We're talking to attorney and author Amy Bock. Her new book is Ordinary Injustice, and we'll be giving away a free copy here in just a few minutes. So, Amy, when you talk to, you go around and talk to bars and groups of lawyers, and what is your prescription? I mean, if you can identify that something has happened over time that really eats away at the true effectiveness and the justice in the justice system. How do we fix this?
Well, the thing is that we can't fix what we can't see. And right now, we can't see what's going wrong because there is no monitoring and measurement. So the book calls for a pilot project in monitoring and measurement. Right now, the leading scholars all agree that courts are the least unexamined public institution in America. No one's keeping track of how many cases are put aside for what reasons: domestic violence, drugs, sexual assault. How many people plead guilty without attorneys? What is the time spent in jail before pleading guilty? There are cases in my book where people are given extremely high bails, like $20,000 for riding a bike on the sidewalk without a bell. And then given no attorney and spending 8 days in jail just for riding a bike on the sidewalk without a bell. This kind of thing happens in misdemeanor courts because those people are considered surplus by the cities. That, you know, people don't matter because these are small crimes and people plead guilty and then they get records and they can't get public housing. We need to start seeing what these kind of collateral consequences are as well.
Is part of the, Amy, is part of the problem here the fact that most of the people who suffer in the justice system that's not working right for everyone are largely minorities and from marginalized communities?
Right. And so that is true. And it does affect the middle class as well. And I have an email on my website, which is www.ordinaryinjustice.com. That's ordinary injustice, not ordinary justice. And there's an email. And I get these emails from people who aren't, you know, are from the middle class or in a different class than the poor. But the problem is that the majority of the people are poor, whether they're victims or defendants, and they just want to put it behind them, and they don't have the means to create a political will, so it never gets to D.C. You know, there are groups like, amazing groups, like Families Against Mandatory Minimums who care about prisoners and prisoners' rights, but somehow they have been able to make a huge sound to change what everybody knows is so true in America.
Yeah. Well, I think even the most hardened observer would like the system to work. You know, I mean, it would like it to work well and work for everybody, I right or left. I think we could all agree with that. But it's not going to be easy to get there.
It's not going to be easy, but we must.
Yeah, I mean, if we are going to continue to be the America that we want to be, and exhibit the ideals that we say we believe in, then you're absolutely right. The new book is Ordinary Injustice, How America Holds Court. Author and attorney Amy Bach. Amy, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seevillepodcast.com for more.